Fantasy Freaks and Geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. I'm your host, James Cope, joined alongside by my merry band of brothers here, the bearded wonder of fantasy. We're talking about Matt Franchise. What's up?
Hey, James.
Alex Galehar, the whiz kid from Wisconsin. What's going on?
What's up?
And what are you laughing about over there, Matt Hart?
that what's up? Like that really enthusiastic. I don't know.
I'm excited. Let's go.
He's fired. Franchise is fired up.
The wide receiver prognosticator, Matt Harmon. What's going on?
Oh, not much. Nothing really going on.
Okay,
here.
All right.
I got nothing to say.
I've eaten about
3 granola bars today.
You were about to get out some feelings, and then you thought better of it, which is good.
I don't have any feelings.
Which is good. And then, of course, MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. What's going on?
Hola, senor.
All right, let's get into it, man. We got a big show in front of us here today. We're going to talk about the NFC West. We're going to break down the Cardinals, the Rams, the 49ers, and the Seahawks. We'll give you a fan league update. I almost forgot. Matt Harmon has, the blowtorch of hot takes when it comes to Todd Gurley. That's going to be coming up later
in
the show.
I really don't, but okay.
Oh, no, you do. You do.
I have a very sensible, measured take.
You absolutely will trash Todd Gurley here in just a moment.
Jeez.
Wow.
So stick around for that. But we shall start with our top news.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
All right, first headline out of Philadelphia. Jordan Matthews is going to be out a few weeks with a knee sprain. Doug Peterson says he is hoping Jordan Matthews will be back for their third preseason game, August 27th, I do believe. But also indicated that he could possibly miss that game as well, but feels confident that he would be back for week one. All right. Now, here's the thing. We've talked about Jordan Matthews. We don't know where he exactly fits in this Doug Peterson offense because, quite frankly, he's a slot player. Does this add more concern? Obviously, it adds more concern, but how about Nelson Agholor now? Where does he fit into this picture?
I liked him before this.
Okay.
I thought he had some sleeper potential even before this. Now, I think he definitely pops up on the radar a little bit stronger here. And I think Matthews will be back. He'll be back, I think, in time for the regular season unless something goes really horribly wrong. But I go back to something Harmon wrote maybe a year ago about the difficulties of running an offense through a slot receiver and how those guys generally can be good but not great fantasy wideouts for you. Agholor's a guy who I think can win on the outside, and as long as he does that, I think he's got some really good potential.
All right. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think that what Marcus was saying, that's the thing that the Eagles have to hope for here is that Agholor can step up on the outside and take some of that pressure off Matthews from the interior. As much as I like Agholor and I just recently wrote about him, it would also be nice if he started building some positive momentum in camp. There's really been no positive drumbeat, which I always like to talk about in the offseason for him, especially since.
Is there anybody in Philadelphia that works on the outside that is building some kind of positive news flow?
Chris Givens?
Oh, boy.
Anybody have Reuben Randall takes?
We are.
No.
We're hurting here. Let's go to Chicago. Alshon Jeffrey returns to practice. He had a hamstring injury, we think, I guess. They're not too great about injury reports out of Chicago, so we can assume he had a hamstring. How concerned are we? Because, again, Alshon Jeffrey was a guy last year, again, when he played just unbelievable, but was battling injuries all throughout last year. How concerned are you that some of these injuries will remain a problem going into 2016?
I'm mildly concerned that this has popped up already. I mean, he could bounce back to full strength and, be fine throughout the preseason, and I'm not going to be worried, but his status is definitely something I'm going to be monitoring, with as much information as you alluded to that we can get out of John Fox in the coming weeks. But I'm not going to, drop him down my board a ton, but if it's between him or somebody else that I have very close in my rankings, I might be leaning to that other person for the interim.
Alshon Jeffery, Keenan Allen.
Oh, Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen all day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, Jeffrey's ADP has fallen all the way to the end of the second round at this point.
Who else is in that group? Anybody know? Is Mike Evans in that group? Mike Evans or
Evans,
Alshon
Evans is going just before Jeffrey, Cooper after Jeffrey, and then Brandon Cooks at the start.
All right, prognosticator, I'll ask you. Mike Evans or Alshon Jeffrey?
I actually have them like 10th and 11th,
yeah.
So they're dead close to me in the same tier. But I would take Jeffrey before I would take I guess I would take
It's tough.
Am I mistaken in saying Jeffrey's playing for a new contract, too?
You are not mistaken. He is on the franchise tag franchise.
I wouldn't take an injury this early in camp too heavily. Like, everyone has hamstrings right now. And
also, he practiced today, right?
Actually, I think the problem is that nobody has a hamstring. That's the problem.
At least not a good one.
Right.
I think it's going to be a big season for Jeffrey.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see what he can do. Because again, man, that talent level is just not to be denied. I love watching him play.
Yeah.
So it'll be a fun season if he's healthy. We'll see. I actually like the fact. Of course, I like the fact that he's in a contract year. So we'll see.
Yep.
How about Willie Snead? There have been so many positive reports regarding Michael Thomas that a lot of folks maybe thought, okay, it's going to be, you know, Michael Thomas playing opposite of Brandon Cooks, but it appears that Willie Snead is having himself a nice camp. This is from Nick Underhill from The Advocate there in New Orleans. Snead has looked even better than last season. I'm quoting Nick Underhill here. It's clear he's right in the middle of Breeze's circle of trust. When things were going poorly Saturday with Brandon Cook sidelined, Snead was the receiver Breeze locked in on to carry the offense. So Nick Underhill is a believer that Willie Snead is going to have a huge role in this offense. Mike Thomas, maybe not. I don't know. What's your take?
Underhill also said today that there may have been some overeager proclamations about Michael Thomas's production this season, which, you know, that kind of tends to happen when there is every positive report coming out of camp. People do get overeager. I like Snead better than Thomas this year. I'm a huge fan of Snead. He's a reception perception guy who shows out very well pretty much across, like, the short to intermediate routes. And I think there's a chance that he can push 120 targets. Like you mentioned, there's just no buzz about how well Snead has been doing in camp, even though those reports are out there. That's kind of the way of Willie Snead's career. I mean, last year he almost cracked 1,000 yards in 15 games. In his first year playing in the NFL, and nobody seems to want to talk about that.
Nobody cared. It was sad for Snead.
Ah, right?
and he had
69 catches, too. I mean,
come
on.
We did care. Harmon and I talked about Snead a lot at the apartment.
Yes, we did. We did.
Behind the curtain there.
A great tactician, Willie Snead, but in terms of that big physical body, I think that's why people get excited about Michael Thomas, no?
Yeah. Which is kind of unfair. Even though Thomas is more of a guy that plays, despite the big body, he plays like a Willie Snead type. You know, he's a really good route runner. He's not necessarily a big vertical threader in the contested catch game. So, yeah, it's interesting to kind of mess with the Saints, like, splits. Like, how are they going to produce week to week? But I still really like Snead where you get him in drafts.
Where they're at right now, and again, you mentioned Michael Thomas, you know, being a fairly good route runner as well. He's got the big body. The hands, again, I don't know. I'm not 100% impressed with what I saw on him in games at Ohio State, but the opportunities will certainly be there. Does having the whole Michael Thomas, Willie Snead thing, does that kind of kill the fantasy potential for both guys if they're both going to be involved in the passing game?
I mean, for me, it just goes back to my typical fear of Saints receivers is that you just never know. And so, like, you get all these guys involved, and that means on any given week, any one of them could play well for you. But on any given week, you just don't know which one it's going to be. So I don't think that changes anything, at least for me, and how I approach them. I like Brandon Cooks. Beyond that, you know, I guess Snead maybe. But beyond that, I don't know. I guess I just have too much fear to really go after one.
All right, let's go to Philadelphia. Tight ends should play a big role. That, according to Zach Berman for Philly.com. Quote, tight end is a strength of this roster, this offensive unit, offensive coordinator Frank Reich said. If you look at Doug Peterson's system and what they did in Kansas City with their tight ends and how we'll utilize them here, it'll be very consistent with that, and we've got the players to do it. Zach Berman went on to write, Ertz will be the biggest contributor of the group. He caught 75 passes last year for 854 yards and 2 touchdowns. Where do we put Zach Ertz's fantasy value in relation to what these news reports are saying?
I mean, I think he could probably be circled more in that late rounds tight end conversation. He's going off the board as around the tight end 12 these days. And I think he might be somebody I'm going to start targeting a little more in that area, along with, like, the Dwayne Allens and Zach Millers of the world, if I miss out on those guys. I like both of them better than Ertz, but if I have to get a consolation prize, you know, aside from my boy Cameron Brate, might be looking to Zach Ertz.
Let me ask you this: Cameron Brate or Zach Ertz?
I'd still probably go Brate. Got to ride that train.
Wow,
me too.
I hopped on board that train.
I'm not.
I'm just not about Zach Ertz.
Me neither.
I'm with you. Like,
we don't need to flashback.
We don't need a flashback from the first incident I ever had here. That's for sure. That's a story for another day. But I don't know. He doesn't score touchdowns with any regularity. He's not I just don't think he's a very a great player. He's fine. And in this offense, I just don't think that there's going to be enough high-powered attempts for him to finish as the tight end 12 where he's going off at board right now in drafts.
And the quarterback situation there, too, in flux. I think there's just too many questions. I'm really not high on Zach Ertz, man. If he's the tight end 12 right now, there's got to be other guys that I would rather draft and take a dart throw at. Like, where's Clive Walford going? I'd rather have Clive Walford.
Couple tight ends later, probably.
Right, but you figure if he's the tight end 12, chances are he's not coming off the board in a lot of drafts.
That's true.
You know, I mean, that's true.
Tight end 2.
That means you know, in theory, 12 team leagues, he's the last guy taken. 10 team leagues, that guy's he's on the waiver wire.
Right.
There. And you know, so if it means I have to go get Zach Ertz for a bye week replacement, or because somebody gets hurt, I feel differently about it than if I'm spending a draft pick on him.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's the range where I view him in. But some drafts, he does go much higher than that.
Yeah.
All right, in Minnesota, Matt Cato, Stephon Diggs is quote shining in Minnesota. Are we undervaluing him? This is from Matt Venzel of the Star Tribune. In the 10 days since the Vikings first reported to Matt Cato, Diggs has been by far the most impressive offensive player. Goes on to write, the Vikings told Diggs to focus on learning all three wide receiver positions during the offseason. From what Venzel is reporting, Diggs has really flourished in that role, moving around the field and playing a bunch of different wide receiver positions. He's really been able to kind of, I guess, abuse matchups, which is very great to see. They said last year, Diggs really just had to play on the outside because they didn't really have anybody else to kind of play on the outside. So, and I think it makes a lot of sense, certainly when you look at that roster. What do we make of the reports from Matt Venzel?
I mean, I think we've been unfairly ignoring Diggs a little bit. He had a strong rookie season too, like Sneed's last year. Granted, he trailed off a lot down the stretch where he didn't have 70 yards for, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 games or whatever it was. However, he did show a lot of promising stuff on tape when you watched it. Like, he was
a precise
route runner. He could make plays after the catch.
Physical dude too.
And with him taking this next step and being a little more versatile in that offense, I mean, he's probably the one that should be going ahead of Treadwell. I think Treadwell is ahead of Diggs right now because people think he'll be more of a red zone threat, but Diggs should probably be the first wide receiver off the board in that offense, and he could be a sneaky value considering you can get him in, like, what, round 10 to 12?
Yeah.
I mean, is he going that high? I was going to say, I'd be surprised if he was going around 12.
Diggs busted out those first 4 games there.
Right.
And then kind of he had one game with multiple touchdowns against the Bears, and then his highest yardage total was 66 after those 4 games. So
it was
slow, but like Gelhar mentioned, you know, he still showed good potential on tape. His weakest thing in reception perception is his success rate versus press coverage.
Okay.
Like you mentioned, lining up on the outside and on the line of scrimmage a lot. Now they're lining him up at flanker in the slot, so I think he'll be able to get better matchups there. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, Treadwell's not even listed as a starter yet on the depth chart, and I know we should probably take depth charts with a grain of salt, but I do think that I'd probably prefer to have Diggs at this point. I think we've been unfair to him.
I mean, this is all well and good. Can you promise me we're going to get extra passing volume in this offense?
Nope. Yeah, that's the big thing.
That's the big thing, is that there's not a lot of volume in this offense. As long as Adrian Peterson walks the earth wearing a purple jersey, it's going to continue to be this way. And you know, as much as we want to hold out hope for Teddy Bridgewater, I am among them. Right now, he's Alex Smith without the running ability.
Oh.
So that means, look, let's just be honest about it. Like, he's Alex Smith, but doesn't run nearly as much. So now you're relying on his wide receivers to make a whole lot of plays after the catch. And maybe Stephon Diggs can, but that's a lot to ask out of somebody.
Yeah, yeah. But at his asking price in like round 9 and 12 team leagues, I'll take a chance on
him. I'll take that all day long.
But, you know, his touchdown upside might be a little limited.
All right, Allen Robinson there in Duval is looking phenomenal. This according to the team's website.
Shock. There's only one person that can answer this question.
As well as he played last season, Robinson has looked like a different receiver early in training camp and a much better one, too. His offseason focus on route running is evident, and he appears to be more aggressive to the ball.
Breaking news, Allen Robinson is hashtag good at football.
Yeah, he really is. You know, I'm surprised by his, ADP, because I kind of view him as a back-end round one guy. I kind of have him in that 10 to 12 range. And I'm not really seeing him go there, really, in a lot of drafts. I'm seeing him kind of go mid-second round or later, and it kind of surprises me.
It's because of this whole narrative about the regression of the Jaguars' offense.
Everybody's favorite new word in the offseason.
Regression. Yeah.
And I think I really think he's one of the guys that I think stays about the same. Yeah, at least maybe he gets better, but I'm not really worried about him taking a big step back this year. I think the guy in that offense that concerns me would be Allen Hurns, but not Allen Robinson.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about it at all.
Me neither. And if he does, he might not catch 14 touchdowns again. I mean, sure, but I think his floor is like 8 or 9 touchdowns.
Right.
And I also think he can progress in the catches and yards department even. I mean, he only caught 80 passes on 159 targets. And when I interviewed him, he didn't interview me. Humble brag earlier in this offseason, like, he talked about being more efficient with his targets, catching more passes and not just relying on big plays. And I think that's what's coming out of camp. I mean, this is a guy that's not even 23 years old yet.
Right.
He's going to continue to improve, and I think we should bet on that kind of talent at the wide receiver position right now. That's just it's crazy that he's not like a consensus back half first round pick, where, you know, guys like DeAndre Hopkins, who we already saw regress mid season,
one word of him. Jaguars. I mean, I think that has a lot to do with it. I think you know, look, I consider myself the fantasy skeptic, and I'm generally of the let's do it. I want to see you do it again. I believe Allen Robinson can do it again, but I think there are teams out there that people look at them and, you know, the Jaguars, the Browns, the Titans, they have this stink on them that I think impacts people when it comes to drafting these guys.
That's fair, but if you think they're going to be bad again, that's actually probably good for fantasy.
Yeah,
because that's the weird thing that people are saying right now, like the Jaguars are definitely going to be better. They've got these new young defenders.
Yeah,
they'll be in more positive game scripts, but I don't think we can say that for sure. So if you think they stink still, that's good.
Even if their defense does take a step forward, it almost assuredly will, because their defense was so bad last year. But even if that's the case, does it really matter for a guy who is the clear-cut number one?
No.
We talk about Allen Hurns. I know he had double-digit touchdowns last year, but, I mean, let's at least acknowledge the fact that he can't stay healthy. If, and I really want to say when, Allen Hurns goes down with some kind of injury, think about how many targets are going to go this guy's way. We're talking about Allen Robinson. Matt Harmon, you mentioned it, 159 targets. That's not, like, absurd. I mean, he could push 180 in terms of targets, can he not?
I could see it.
Yeah.
If things break the right way. But
I mean, even if they have positive game scripts, who cares?
Yeah, and they can want to be a ball control run team all they want, but their personnel is set up to be a pass first team. They have an athletic tight end, a stud number one receiver. Allen Hurns is a more than competent number two. They have a young quarterback who's aggressive.
Right.
I don't think you're going to just make Blake Bortles dial it back in. Like, they're built to be a pass first team, and I think that's what their identity will be.
That's good stuff. All right. The Pats are, quote unquote, preserving Deion Lewis by keeping him on the PUP. He is not on the PUP because of setbacks. This from ESPN's Mike Reese. Running back Deion Lewis, who is coming back from a torn left ACL sustained November 7th, remains on the PUP list, but I'm told this isn't a result of any type of setback. The expectation of those close to Lewis is that the team would take it slow with him, because preserving him for the 16-game regular season is the goal. Reese goes on to write, during the first 5 games of last season, he was on the field for 66% of the team's offensive snaps before injuries derailed that pace. What do we make of the news? I love Deion Lewis this year.
Yep.
Clearly, you've taken him pretty high in several of our mocks.
Yeah,
electric,
I know.
Man.
I think I've taken him in like the fourth round.
Yeah, beginning of the fourth a couple times, I think.
Well, if you're in that back half of the draft, I mean, you pretty much have no choice. You know, if there's a guy that you like and you're picking 9th out of 10th or 10th out of 12th or something, and there's a guy you like on the turnaround, you pretty much got to take
him. You got to take him.
You know? So that's where kind of the ADP, it's like, again, when you're drafting on those turns, it's like you kind of not ignore ADP, but, you know, certainly take it less into consideration.
Right.
You got to just go get your guy.
I think this is encouraging news for Lewis, though, because we had heard recently reports surface that weren't the reports that he could even start the regular season on the PUP?
That was
like that.
Random, wild speculation.
Yeah, and then right away, one of the other beat writers was like, no.
No.
He's on the PUP just for, like, this reason here. And I think that's a good reason, like a good indicator that they want to keep him preserved. And to your point about the fourth round, James, I'm finding that to be, like, the round that I'm kind of just grossed out by the most. Like, there's Latavius Murray and Carlos Hyde, and DeMarco Murray's in like ADP.
Ryan Matthews
Well, he's going later now because he's been hurt. But, like, so either taking one of those volume running backs, or you're reaching on a wide receiver like Mike Floyd if you really like him, or Julian Edelman or Golden Tate or Doug Baldwin. I kind of like Deion Lewis there out of all those guys.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, it's a great sign. Just real quick, like, I think you were getting to the point, Matt, and I just want to make sure we say it, is that by preserving him, it's also a good sign that they want him to have a decent workload in the season. They wouldn't preserve him and then be like, you're going to get five touches a game. Like, they know this guy was a difference maker in their offense last year. They're going to feed him the rock.
The famed slayer of Bellatrix.
Yeah, buddy.
Let's do an NFC West preview. We'll start with the Cardinals. They were good last year. You know who was great? How about David Johnson? David Johnson, where is he going right now in drafts? Like, anywhere between, what, 5 and, like, 9?
Anywhere between 1 and 12.
That's right. Very good.
Yeah, it's
very
pretty
good.
All over the place.
All right, where do you guys take him? Where do you guys have him ranked?
I have him as my first running back.
He's my number one RB.
Same.
Same.
Are we across? You were across.
We're all in agreement
there.
We all spent too much time together.
Yeah.
We're also all so smart. So.
Yeah, that too.
He's a premium athlete playing in a premium offense. There's a lot to like about DJ. What is there anything that concerns you about him?
No.
Honestly, no. I mean, Bruce Arians keeps trying to weave this narrative that they're not going to feed they're not going to feed David Johnson the rock by mentioning Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington and stuff. But we all saw last year down the stretch what he could do in this offense with his dual threat ability. And I think they're just blowing smoke because other people in the organization, like Stump Mitchell, his running backs coach, Steve Keim, the general manager, other people have been pumping up Johnson and the things that he can do for this offense. He's a total mismatch when he gets out of the backfield. Like, there's the great – Wessling has made this point a couple times on the Around the NFL podcast, but the first time the Packers played the Cardinals when they got boat raced in the regular season, they tried to cover him with a linebacker, failed. They tried with, like, a safety and failed, and they ended up putting, like, a cornerback on him too and double-teaming him because he was that good out of the backfield. His ceiling is probably the highest. Like, would anybody argue with saying his ceiling is the highest among the running backs in 2016?
I mean, obviously there's Le'Veon Bell, but he's the only one who has that sort of per-game upside, like, to be just massively unfair as a rusher and a receiver. And we'll talk about this in the Todd Gurley section. Like, he checks all the boxes of what it's important to have when you're a top fantasy running back. He plays in a great offense. He plays the good quarterback. And he gets a ton of work in the receiving game.
And he is hashtag good.
And he's really freaking good.
He's a combine warrior, so you know I'm impressed there.
Yep.
You know, but here's the reports too. To Matt's point, there are reports that they're actually working him in the slot too.
Yeah.
In training camp, so that's really interesting. Can you imagine Chris Johnson in the backfield, and then they just kind of slide DJ right into a slot?
It's a nightmare. I mean, that's
game over.
Like, it's great.
Tyrann Mathieu said it. I think it was on All or Nothing that David Johnson reminds him of a bigger Marshall Faulk, and that's the same stuff they used to do with Marshall Faulk.
It's true.
Yeah. He'd just roll out in the slot, and then that linebacker, whoever, was just like, basically, well, I have no chance.
He's such a great pass catcher out of the backfield. Carson Palmer, undervalued, overvalued, rightly valued? What do we do with Carson Palmer?
I mean, he's coming off the board, what, double-digit rounds you're looking at, you know, 10, 11, something like that. I mean, I feel like that's a good spot for him.
I think age and injury concerns are pushing his draft price down.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they are. I guess I'm not really afraid. Yeah. I'm not scared. You know, I just like what he has around him. And when he's there, he's amazing. Plus, I feel like if you are waiting on a quarterback and you're waiting that long to get Carson Palmer, you're probably drafting another quarterback within the next couple of rounds as well. So, you know, you'll have that insulation in the event that something bad does happen.
I'll tell you what I would like to do. A Carson Palmer, Eli Manning combo.
I'm okay with that.
That's not bad. I'll take that. For some reason, Eli Manning – I shouldn't say for some reason. The Giants are like one of those like marquee teams where guys on these teams, like the Packers, the Cowboys, the Giants, they just go way earlier than they probably should. Eli Manning, I think on NFL.com, is going somewhere in like the eighth round, which is just bananas. Stop it. But I think in a lot of leagues, I don't think you'll see him go that high. And a lot of mocks, I've been able to take him, you know, round 11, 12. But that being said, hey, look, there's a lot of guys. I get people asking me all the time, hey, what are some late-round quarterbacks? I'm like, all of them.
Yeah.
right? Like, give me all of them. Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, Tyrod Taylor.
Ryan Fitzpatrick at this point,
Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think, is a great target.
Yeah.
There's so many. That's the reason why, you know, you're hearing fantasy experts far and wide say, just take your quarterback
late. I think why I put this in that is Palmer being undervalued because he's in that group of guys. But when he was healthy last year, he was a cut above those guys. Yeah. He was a consistent top four or five quarterback every week because of his weapons. He's got David Johnson, mentioned Michael Floyd, Larry Fitzgerald, and John Brown. Like, what a group of, you know, skill position players to work with. It's the same kind of thing we talked about on a recent pod with Drew Brees, how, like, we should be targeting him instead of all his wide receivers because he's got so many great weapons and he's an elite quarterback. Carson Palmer is an elite quarterback in a loaded offense. I think we might be sleeping on him just a touch here.
He should be the consensus five quarterback off the board. Behind Cam, Rodgers, Wilson,
Russell,
Breeze, and then Palmer. Palmer.
I agree.
Palmer ahead of Luck?
Yeah,
yes.
I think so. Just it's a more stable offense. There's better weapons, and they go deep a lot. He led the NFL last year in average.
Well, that's what he does.
And I also feel like he's better protecting the football than Andrew Luck is.
Yeah, I think one reason his value is a little depressed right now is people are worried, did he go full Jake Delhomme in last year's playoffs because he was just a pretty much a nightmare. But at the same time, he had a finger injury that I think was definitely a big deal. I'm not worried about Palmer.
No, neither am I.
Gosh, you know, I got Luck ahead of Palmer, mostly because of the upside.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, Luck's going to run, too. He's going to scramble. He can get in the end zone. Palmer's one of those statue quarterbacks.
He is a dad.
I mean, let's not forget, he scored that run rushing touchdown or two-point conversion or whatever it is, and then fell over trying to spike the football last year.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot
like,
about
there's no ground game upside with Palmer.
He's not known for his athleticism.
That's not his thing.
Hey, I would also argue with you that the Arizona Cardinals have better weapons, at least from the receiver position. I really like the combination of T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief. But let me use that as a transition to talk about the Arizona pass catchers. It's kind of a jumbled mess a little bit. There are three of them that are very good. The guy who led fantasy production last year, Larry Fitzgerald, is pretty much the third guy in this triangle here. And I think for people who are listening to the podcast, I'd love to have you guys explain why Larry Fitzgerald, in your mind, is – because all of you guys have Larry Fitzgerald third, right, among Michael Floyd, John Brown, and Larry Fitz.
Yes. Yeah.
So can you guys explain to the listeners out there, why is Larry Fitz not the guy who should be leading this wide receiver trio?
He's old.
That's a good start.
But isn't it possible he's old but also the most talented guy?
He is really he's still really talented. He's still a really good receiver and he will still give you decent fantasy production. But last year he ended up leading sort of by default. I mean, you had Michael Floyd who was hurt to start the year. Kind of took him a while to get in the swing of things. John Brown, I know Harmon loves him and spends a lot of time watching him.
Oh God! Yeah.
But he had some up and down games last year. I mean, there were times
he was hurt too.
There were times when you know he just wasn't really very visible in the offense, and so because of that, the Cardinals fell back on Larry Fitzgerald. And let me tell you, if your fallback position is Larry Fitzgerald, that's a
good
problem to have. That's a really good problem to have. But I think this year with Floyd, you know, hopefully being healthy, Brown being healthy and productive, I think they go back to trying to go with the younger guys as their primary targets. And I think, I mean, I believe this is the year for Michael Floyd. And I have Brown just a couple of clicks below that. They're pretty even to me, but I think this is the year we see Michael Floyd break out.
So I have John Brown number one among the receivers. Don't at me. And I think it's pretty clear. But the biggest problem for Larry Fitzgerald is actually David Johnson. You mentioned him running routes from the slot. And when all three of the receivers were healthy and Johnson was a part of the offense, Fitzgerald's floor just – I mean, his ceiling just – and floor, again, one of those crawl spaces just were so close. He didn't really have any ceiling. His average depth of target fell to 5.8. That's like Golden Tate levels low. And David Johnson's was 3.1, which is one of the highest among running backs. Those two kind of cannibalized each other in terms of targets if you think about just running those drag routes from the slot. And I think that's only going to be exacerbated this year as Johnson's fully integrated into the offense. Like, I just don't really see a ton of upside or even a great floor to rely on with Fitzgerald as long as David Johnson is there and the two outside receivers are healthy.
Right. This is a good stat from our friend TJ Hernandez, who writes for 4 for 4. In Arizona's first 12 games of 2015, Larry Fitzgerald had almost 30% of the targets in the offense. In the final six games, when Floyd, Brown, and David Johnson all had their roles, that fell to just 19%.
Yeah.
There's a huge drop in the amount of volume he was seeing. And I think you're right, Harmon, the upside isn't there because you're just going to be chasing, hopefully, a red zone touchdown with Larry Fitzgerald because he's not going to be running the deep routes that Brown and Floyd are and getting more work there. You're going to have to hope they get close and that David Johnson doesn't take those touches and it goes to Fitzgerald instead.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to L.A. Rams, shall we? Matt Harmon just wrote a piece. It is, you can find it on NFL.com/fantasy.
Or slash Harmon.
NFL.com/Harmon. And he just lays to waste Todd Gurley.
Basically says he should be a last-round pick.
That is not what I said, listeners.
I mean,
of
just straight blowtorch.
I see they're
to Todd Gurley's ADP.
I see they're already Matt Harmon,
who's an idiot.
That is the sound of the blowtorch.
I see there are already Harmon. 19 comments on the piece. I won't be reading.
It was well, I noticed when we were coming up here that it was already in the homepage on NFL.com.
Oh, well, so when we had the meeting this morning, Patrick immediately was like, "All right, so we have some options for the CP. Harmon, what the hell is this piece about Gurley?" Like,
yeah.
He was ready for that one as soon as it came out. So
all right, so here's the thing. Todd Gurley's a top 5 pick right now.
Top three pick.
And I would challenge you to find a draft where he goes below the top five. So he is a consensus top 5 pick. You could largely say he's a consensus top 3 pick, okay? All right, so here we go. Matt Harmon says what? Todd Gurley does not – I think you in your piece you wrote somewhere along something along the lines of he would have to have a historic season to outperform a top 5 draft pick.
Yeah, because if you're taking him in the top 3 as the first running back off the board, you want him to be the top scoring running back, right? Now, I went back over the last 7 years and looked at the correlations between running backs that finished in the top 5 in standard leagues. I didn't even go PPR for you normal people out there. So the things that I looked at were target volume, quarterback quality, and I measured that by fantasy points scored per game and also adjusted yards per attempt, which I think is one of the best stats to evaluate the quarterback position, and also overall offensive effectiveness measured by Football Outsiders DVOA and points scored. And one of the things that just became clear was that the running backs need all of those variables to line up. They need to be heavily involved in the receiving game. They need to be in good offenses. They need to play with strong quarterbacks. The majority of the running backs have finished in the top 5 over the last 7 years, and it actually gets stronger when you measure it down from just 2012 to 2015. There's just a strong correlation between top 5 running backs and all those factors. And yes, I'm aware Todd Gurley's great. I made sure to mention that 100 times in the piece because I think he is an awesome running back. But at the same time, there's more to scoring fantasy points than just being awesome. And I think if you really look at it, this Rams offense doesn't meet any of those qualifications. They are the slowest paced team in the league. They were 32nd last year. Jeff Fisher, as the league has trended towards more up-tempo pass or more up-tempo offenses, he's actually slowed his teams down for whatever reason. since his last 3 years with the Titans and his 4 years with the Rams, his offenses have averaged 26 in the NFL in terms of players run. That's just really bad. You just don't get as many opportunities. You also don't have any clarity at the quarterback position. Our own Bucky Brooks has said that he's shocked that Jared Goff doesn't look ready to be a starter at all. So if you're telling me that Case Keenum's going to lead the offense to victory again, sure, okay, you can think that. Jared Goff would need to establish himself very quickly as a high-quality quarterback to help Todd Gurley. And, you know, lastly, Gurley only had 26 targets in 13 games as a rookie, which would be a 32 pace. And most of the running backs that fit in bad offenses with bad quarterbacks, all of those, like Maurice Jones-Drew, Peyton Hillis, those guys scored. Peyton Hillis, I can't believe I just said
that. Wow. What a drop.
That happened.
Right? don't lose your steam. Don't let Peyton Hillis stop you.
And Matt Forte especially. Those guys that played with poor quarterbacks or in poor offenses, they had immense target volume. And the Rams brought back Benny Cunningham this year, and clearly they value his ability as a pass protector and pass catcher on third down. He had the 5th most percentage of team snaps on third down behind receiving backs like Gio Bernard, Danny Woodhead, Duke Johnson, and Shane Vereen. Then it was Cunningham. And he's not a big factor, but at the same time, if he's still there, his presence is going to take away from Gurley. So he doesn't have that safe reception floor to give him a week-to-week cushion for when the offense is bad and the quarterbacks are bad.
Okay. Your Honor, may I
hold on.
May I read a question?
Hold on.
All right, so I said a lot of things.
Okay,
let me reset the listeners. I'm
going
to stop now.
Let me reset the listeners here because you wrote, I mean, again, when I say he put a blowtorch to Todd Gurley, I mean, it is just a 20,000-word blowtorch. It is unbelievable.
Not 20,000.
And I read 19. Every word of it, and it was fascinating. But here's the general arguments, and Matt Harmon, jump in if I'm misstating
sure.
it here.
No, okay?
So basically, Todd Gurley, not worth the top five pick because bad quarterback, bad offense.
Slow offense.
Bad and slow offense. And not utilized in the passing game.
Yeah.
Those three things basically
yes, and,
is the
and,
summary of your argument.
Yes, and okay. the key, those are three of the keyest factors.
The keyest.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
The most key factors to running back success in fantasy football. Again, the most recent examples that I could find that did not play with good quarterbacks,
okay.
especially, were Adrian Peterson in his 2,000-yard season.
Okay.
So, again, like the most superhuman running back season ever. And Matt Forte, when he had 130 targets in Mark Trestman's offense, which was the second most for a running back ever.
Your Honor, I'd like to cross-examine.
Okay. So now, yeah, please, MP,
I'd like to cross-examine, sir. What do you consider to be the floor for Todd Gurley in terms of where he will land in the running back rankings?
I don't see a scenario really where he can finish outside the top six.
Okay.
Unless without injury. So that's my point.
Okay, so then, may I continue?
No, yeah, I can. Sorry.
What do you see potentially, realistically, as the ceiling for Todd Gurley in running back rankings this year?
Three. I don't see a number one ceiling.
Okay, so following along, if you take Todd Gurley as the first running back off the board, and he returns to you, let's just say, for the sake of argument, number five running back potential. Are you mad?
Are you mad? I would.
Yes or no, sir? Are
yes,
you mad?
Yes. If you're taking him as the first running back off the board,
really?
You want him to be more than just the fifth best running back. Because that means he's not a week-to-week difference maker for you. That means.
But he is at a position that's dead, that is void, yeah, that is yeah. void of depth. That's fine.
No,
that's
it's fine. It's fine from a season-long perspective, but you're going to lose weeks if Todd Gurley doesn't have the floor of some of these other running backs. Like, there was a stretch last year in three games where he averaged just about 10 fantasy points. He scored one touchdown. He had, like, a one-point
right.
game in that stretch.
But what it
that's
means,
a realistic floor that can happen because he's not vaulted up by a strong offense or a pass.
What that means, that in theory, though, that means there are only four other guys in the whole history of everything, for the year at least, on this earth. That means there are four other people walking this planet that have higher floors than him. Meanwhile, there are however many other running backs in this league that have a lower floor than Todd Gurley. If I take him as the first running back off the board and he comes back to me with top five results, I'm cool with that.
So the counter argument with what MG, by the way, solid cross examination.
Yeah, I'm sitting over here like I had a little bag of popcorn before we started. I'm wishing I had saved that for the podcast. I just wanted to turn off my mic and start eating some popcorn.
Ooh-wee. The MG counter argument, and I get this. The just sheer amount of volume that he's going to get gives him a pretty darn good safe floor, and Matt Harmon even admitting as much that the floor is actually pretty good overall for Todd Gurley. Now, is it worth a top five pick? Harmon says no.
Here's the thing. There's no way I would take him ahead of any of the three receivers.
No, I would not.
Top guy
or would I?
In okay. a fantasy, even in a standard league.
Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr., and Julio Jones.
Correct.
Right.
Those
I, would
that
take,
are
I agree with
in.
That.
I would take AJ Green over him. Oh. I would take David Johnson and Ezekiel Elliott over him.
Okay.
Then once, so the next kind of groups in my tiers there that you're starting to look at are like Allen Robinson.
Would you take Adrian Peterson over him?
See, no, probably not, because I do think, like, from a week to – well, because I think Peterson's the same proposition. Like, what we saw last year with Adrian Peterson was that he had those crater floor weeks too, and I just think that because neither one of them are passing games.
He was also
the
second running back in fantasy last year.
Yeah, but again, you're looking at it from a season-long perspective, and I know that matters, but at the same time, I'm more interested in what you're going to do for me week to week because you got to win weeks.
Right, but everybody – at some point, everybody's going to let you down. Even your parents. Everybody's
you don't even have to tell me twice about that one.
You know, like, at some point, everybody's going to let you down. Sorry, so, I mean, if that is the case, if that's what you're worried about, then don't draft anybody.
This is why you shouldn't be drafting running backs in the first round anyways. This is why I'm not touching a lot of running backs, because they're fragile assets, because they have this low floor. Even the top guys, like Gurley.
But when you get a good one, you're already a step ahead of everybody.
But who
else
the hell projects as one of the good ones from, a clear consensus right now, other than Johnson?
David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, Adrian Peterson.
I think it ends after Johnson and Elliott, because just the rest of these guys don't line up the way that you want from a clear top running back.
Man, Lamar Miller's down there in Houston right now, just feeding.
I have Miller ranked over Gurley. Look, I think he projects in a better offense with more receiving work.
Which comes back to my original point that you think that Todd Gurley is trash.
I don't think he's trash. I wish he wasn't playing for the Rams.
All right. Oh. I mean, you guys were the ones arguing over there, and I'm, like, sweating back here.
Yeah, man. Right.
So go to NFL.com/Harmon. Read the whole thing. Hit him up on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB to either say
Matt Harmon, who's an idiot,
or tell him that they agree with his point. But let's move on. Tavon Austin, sleeper, but outside of that, is anybody touching anyone else in this offense?
Todd Gurley.
Todd Gurley, solid
franchise.
Sleeper.
Don't go back down that more hole.
Let's go to San Francisco. No one else is on this offense is interesting at all. I don't care. We're going to San Francisco. The 49ers. Carlos Hyde. Where's he going? Fourth round-ish. Basically.
I'll take him there all day.
Overpriced, underpriced. How do you value him?
Appropriately priced, I believe.
Yeah. He's one of my favorite players if you're going wide receiver heavy at the top of the draft. Once you start going, like, if you go three wide receivers near the top of the draft, in round four, I really like what Carlos Hyde is bringing to the table in a Chip Kelly offense in round four. I don't mind it at all. Now, if he's my – if I'm going running back heavy and I'm looking at some wide receivers mixed into that draft class, I might shy away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's in the right spot, because there's certainly a ton of upside, especially in the Chip Kelly offense, and we've seen how talented he is. But there's a lot of risk, because that offense could be bad as well, and game scripts could go away, and he could not catch passes, and Chondron could be the one with more touches for several weeks.
That's not – I don't want to hear that name.
we know you're scared by all the vowels, James, but
it's a lot of vowels.
Torrey Smith, I will go back to the prognosticator for this one. You like Torrey Smith this coming up season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really see what's not to like other than
the fact that he's one-dimensional and
but
also
he's but
not
he's
that
not
good.
He's hey, not no. He's not one-dimensional. He's a deep threat. That's his primary game, but he can also get open on some of the underneath routes. He had a pretty high success rate on slant routes and reception perception. He can do enough to be a functional number one receiver in this offense, you know, and you don't have to pay for him. He's a late ninth round pick at best in ADP right now. I think that's a slam dunk. There's no way he finishes with less than 120 targets. No way. With the pace that this offense runs and the fact that he's the most established threat there, you look at what fast X receivers have done with Chip Kelly. DeSean Jackson had a career year. Jeremy Maclin had a career year. I think Smith is not going to reach those levels, but if he finished as a top 24 receiver, it wouldn't shock me.
So, allow me to be a bitter 49er fan here for a minute. Because that's the one thing we keep hearing about is the pace of play, the up-temponess of a Chip Kelly offense,
yep.
Which
a lot of plays.
It's great. You run a lot of plays, or you can go three and out really fast. And the problem with this group versus what he had, he doesn't have the talent in San Francisco that he had in Philadelphia. And I know that last year the Eagles weren't great on offense. They, at least on paper, were still a more talented bunch than what is
were
in
they?
San Francisco.
Were they, though, last year in Philadelphia?
I felt more confident with their running back rotation than I do with Carlos Hyde. I felt better with their wide receivers than I do with Torrey Smith and your BFF Bruce Ellington.
We haven't even gotten to the real star of the show, your boy Bruce Ellington.
Oh my God. You know, I mean,
I take
Zach Ertz over Vance McDonald. I mean, I just think on paper,
right.
Last year's Philly team was a better team than this Niners team.
Probably, but like marginally, I would say. Not by a great degree.
Maybe by like two points in Madden team rankings.
Yeah,
like
I viewed him the same. Man, I really do.
Because
they were trying to figure out DeMarco Murray. I think that set them back offensively a little bit. I don't think they have to do that with the running back position here in San Francisco. Carlos Hyde is the guy.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't work out, it's not going to work out, right? and they didn't have to figure out how to work in a Ryan Matthews or a Darren Sproles. I really like what the 49ers –
just dissing Sean Drone, huh?
Yes.
Well, can we talk about the GOAT, Bruce Allen?
We know you want. We know you want to. So bring it out.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, Bruce Ellington, another guy that he has not played much at the NFL level, but there's been nothing but positive buzz about him in the offseason. He locked down the slot receiver role in mini camps. And, again, it's not a direct one-to-one thing potentially, but Jordan Matthews racked up some numbers in that role last year. Again, even when the team was bad in garbage time, Matthews did produce. He got over 100 targets both years in his career, playing primarily in the slot. And then in the offseason, or in the training camp, once that got going, then reports were that Matthews is – or not Matthews. Yeah, I'm getting confused. I'm still shook. that Ellington was the clear number two receiver.
Yeah.
And a clear breakout player. And I think that Ellington is actually good. I think that he was a good player at South Carolina. I looked at him for just 70 – the only 77 routes I could get for reception perception. It looked okay. That's on Backyard Banter if you want to check that out. And I just think that the opportunity in this offense, because they're going to be bad, because they're going to run a lot of plays, offensive players are going to matter for San Francisco. And I think that Bruce Ellington is one of the guys that could clearly benefit from that. If he had 70 catches this year, that wouldn't shock me a bit.
Oh,
there we go.
That might be hotter than your Todd Gurley take.
So wait, I mean, I'm not going to diss Bruce Ellington. I mean, where are you looking at drafting him? I mean,
like
11,
the
12.
In MFL 10s, I've had to take him in like the 13th round at best because people know I like Bruce Ellington.
He's going to go on draft.
But yeah, like in most casual leagues, you can spend a 15th round pick or
he's free.
Essentially
free.
Yeah. And maybe that changes if the drumbeat, and I always come back to the drumbeat, and the drumbeat has been clear for Bruce Ellington. If that continues to progress into good preseason performances, then we have to probably think about maybe taking him a little higher because people will be on him then as a sleeper. But, I mean, I just think that there's a pretty clear path to playing time, target loads, and I think there's a talent there.
All right. That's your Bruce Ellington update, everybody. on to Seattle.
See you in week 10 when he's the wide receiver. Five.
Oh my gosh,
stop. I'm just kidding.
Let's go to Seattle. Rawls just came off the pup. They said he passed his physical. His ADP right now, I think somewhere, if I'm not mistaken, I think I saw in Fantasy Football Calculator his ADP was somewhere in the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah.
I would imagine that's going to climb. How high will it climb? I think before the injury reports came out, we saw Rawls going in the mid-second. Will his value get back up into that mid-second round?
It might. I mean, the reports all offseason have been Rawls is going to be out the entire preseason. Like, we're not going to see him play in a preseason game. So I think as long as that remains the case, he'll hover in the third or fourth round because nobody's going to know. And then come week one, they plug him in, and then, you know, people will be like, oh, I got a bargain.
CJ Prosize, the GOAT, according to Matt Franchi.
The number one scoring PPR running back.
That's right. He's the only dude. I've been saying this
for weeks.
No, but isn't
he's hurt as well, is he not?
Yeah, he's out with a hamstring for 7 to 10 days as of last week.
Okay.
But he's the only one of these dudes who actually has a role where the coaches have come out and said, he's going to be our pass-catching third-down guy. And there's some value in that. And so that means Rawls is going to lose some snaps, but it's probably not going to be enough to really affect his fantasy value because he'll still be like the goal line guy, the early down guy. And we saw what he can do. He's a great running back. It's just a matter of how healthy is his ankle and can he hold up on 10 months recovery from a shattered ankle. The other thing is these rookies, they have all these rookies they drafted. Alex Collins is working in with the first team in camp, taking advantage of his opportunities. Christine Michael is there.
I really wish I could play the X-Files theme every time. Royalty and rights issues, but anytime you hear us say Chris and Michael, just imagine.
Especially because we just sat in a meeting about the intellectual property and copyrights. And
can I at least hum it? Is that allowed?
I think that's okay.
That's almost as bad as when Gelhard does the Daily Show thing at home.
Oh, yeah. I do it every time just to annoy Harmon when we watch it.
Because if he did it once, he's like, that was so accurate, wasn't it? It's like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
But we're going to have to clip that one.
Anyways.
I think right now, Rawls is the guy you want. Prosize will be your PPR third down guy, maybe a flex in standard leagues. And to handcuff Rawls, I think Michael is the target, like, late in drafts. Because if Rawls goes down, Michael's going to be the guy.
Add Kristen Michael to the wheel of hate.
I'm not crazy.
I don't think you're crazy about this.
Stop. Oh, my God. I was with you all the way, franchise. Why? Then you had to go and drop the X-Files on us? What? Like, really?
Did you see
like,
my tweets last week?
No, bro.
The truth is out there.
The truth.
Stop, bro.
The truth is out there.
Bro, stop.
James
has got stiff arms.
No.
And spin moves.
No. Absolutely not. I thought you were going to say CJ Procise was the handcuff.
No,
Why would you say he's a third down guy. No.
Well, okay. So Procise has a potential to become that kind of bell cow guy, but that's not what they're talking about.
They're talking about him as a pass catcher who may line up in the slot
every once in a while. I see him as kind of a gadgety type guy who's going to
– I thought he's the GOAT.
Well, yeah.
That was the hot takes episode, James. You can't take all that to heart.
He's one of my favorite rookie running backs, and I'm going to get him in all the dynasty leagues I can.
Okay.
I
got to be realistic.
We're going to move on. No one's drafting Michael. Stop it.
He's a handcuff to Rawls. Why not?
He's not. Stop it.
Yeah.
What?
No, I agree with
I'm with Franchise.
But I've said enough stupid on this podcast.
I'm not being stupid.
Better value.
I don't think you are either. I think you're fine.
Better
you
value.
Watch. James Coe, you watch.
Better value.
You'll see.
Doug Baldwin in the fifth.
The truth is out there.
Or Tyler Lockett in the seventh. Baldwin in the fifth or Lockett in the
sixth. This is about their ADPs right now. So let's pull the room.
Lockett.
Franchise says Lockett. Marcus, what's
that? I mean, if you're asking better value, Lockett's the better value.
I'm going angry Doug.
I think...
Harmon, we know where your heart's going, isn't it?
I'm going to say Tyler Lockett, of course.
I think Doug Baldwin. And it's hard, though, because I love Tyler Lockett going into this year. But I will say this, though. The Doug Baldwin-Russell Wilson chemistry is undeniable.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Lockett is a year away.
I mean, I did see there was a report out of, I think it was a scrimmage ESPN was covering it that the Seahawks held, that Lockett did lead all players with, like, 7 receptions or something in the scrimmage. And he said it seemed like there was a clear... what's the word I'm looking for? Like a clear insistence by the team to put the ball in Lockett's hands. So he's definitely the breakout guy. But I think as far as a fifth round pick goes, you know, you think of how your draft goes. If you went wide receiver heavy, maybe he's your third or fourth wide receiver. Or even if you got a couple running backs and Baldwin's your number two wide receiver, you should be able to lock him in for like 1,100 and 8 or 9.
Bare
minimum.
And I think the upside is there too. I think the upside for a guy like Doug Baldwin, again, is he going to rampage the league like he did last year? Probably not, but clearly it's a shift in the offense, leaning on Russell Wilson all the way. And if he had one reliable, consistent target that he went to again and again and again and again, it was Doug Baldwin.
Right.
I know it's going to sound a little out there, but I think his ceiling is somewhere in the ballpark of 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns. I really do.
I think he's a fine fourth round pick where he goes, and he's another one that people are like, hey, he's going to regress, but we know that. That's why he's a fourth round pick.
Yeah,
right.
Not a first round pick.
Right.
That drives me nuts. But
it does. Yeah.
I think they're both fine values where they are, and I can see Lockett outperforming Baldwin this year, but Baldwin is probably the clear
number. Right. I like to modify it was Rummy's phrase, right? The crawl space one that you mentioned for the player with
space,
the like. I think he's like an attic player. He's got a little more space in there, but it's still like a safe floor and an enticing ceiling for Baldwin.
You're going to have to talk to Rummy about getting that copyrighted.
All right. I'll shoot him a DM after we're out of here.
Fabulous. All right. Let's do a fan league update, shall we?
Yeah, let's get to it. I know people are excited to know. And if you have not entered yet, don't forget, rate and review the podcast on iTunes or your app or whatever. We look through those. And also, it always helps to shoot me a screen grab on Twitter because I favorite all of them. If I haven't gotten to yours yet, send it to me again. I just had somebody do that today. I went and favorited that one so we can sift through them. But we're going to add our second entrant into every league. And who wants to start?
Bearded League guys.
All right.
What's up?
I'll go.
We got something?
So Harmon picked our guy on our previous episode. That was our first entrant. We're going with our second entrant today.
Beautiful.
He reviewed the podcast. Looks like he's a New Orleans Saints fan.
Okay.
I'll read his review of the podcast here.
Please.
All right, let's
greatest podcast for fantasy football around.
Ho, hello.
High praise for us. That's good. That's good.
Off to a good start.
The guys at NFL Fantasy Live are awesome. They are my family while I'm at work.
Oh.
Aww. You're our family too, guy.
Don't come asking for money.
Tuesday mornings go extremely slow, waiting on the podcast to pop up to hear the guys' thoughts and insights on players and rankings. I would love to join the Bearded Listener League, or the other less manly league.
Hey,
whoa!
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, listener league where Gelhar and Grant belong in the less manly league. That's why mainly why I picked this guy.
Because
he called you guys less manly.
I don't have to ask you to leave.
To compete against guys who I've listened to for years with would be a great experience, and I would love to destroy y'all and reign supreme as the most manliest beard-growing fantasy player on the planet.
Beautiful.
Hashtag beards. Hashtag real men have beards.
Holy.
Frank Scanduro, welcome to the Beard League.
Hello.
That blowtorch is for what he threw at Marcus and me.
So just like tweet at Franchise and I, and one of us will follow you and get your email so we can
baby. There we go.
And then I'll block you after that.
Hey.
I'm kidding about that part.
The OG League. Do we have one?
The less manly league.
Marcus, I think I'm going to have to give you the floor for this one.
We do have one. So this goes back to last week when we announced our first entrant into the OG League. See, what had happened was...
it was right there on the card,
Alex, Alex Gelhar and I, in our inter-office chat, we were, you know, sending... nominees back and forth, the guys that we thought had a real shot at this thing. And when it came time to announce, I might have Steve Harvey'd it a little bit and announced the wrong name.
It was on the card the whole time.
It was on the card the whole time. And so I said the wrong thing. I heard about it from... the person who was kind of had
from Miss Columbia
who had gotten his heart broken over the whole deal, something to the effect of, I should have had the tweet pulled up, but basically he said he laughed, he cried, he went through a range of emotions.
He's and, freaking out right now. At this
and
moment.
So
we're about to Steve Harvey him again.
By the way, I mean it's a solid review. So I mean I'll read the review here. If you need a top notch fantasy football podcast, listen to these guys. Aw, thanks. Not only are they experts, but you feel like you're discussing fantasy football with your buddies every week. That works out perfectly if none of your real friends like fantasy football as much as you do. You should also probably try getting new friends.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
I won't league discriminate. The Beard League is a reach for me. I'm smooth-faced, despite my soul being as bearded as can be. I'll go to whoever will have me on their team, so I'm basically the Terrell Owens of fantasy football.
Oh, wow.
That means he's going to burn his bridge once he's done with our league.
Will he be doing, like, sit-ups in our parking
lot? Perhaps. We want to see that video, and want him to cry and
say,
my
God.
That's my commissioner. That's,
but, you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, he's willing to kind of be a Swiss Army knife and go wherever he can be a fit.
Okay.
If you need to box jump a mailbox, I'm in.
Wow.
Which I don't know why I would need that in my life, but hey. I'm a fan of the pod, would be honored to join. It's the perfect situation. It's like O. Henry and Alanis Morissette had a baby and named it this exact situation. Nice Archer reference. Take care, guys. Keep up some of the work. Hashtag Gostkowski in the fifth. So with all that, John Williams at Bad Apple J.
You're not in.
No, you're in.
And welcome to the OG League.
It would have been so much funnier.
You guys are so heartless.
Again.
Because Harmon's the same way. You guys are so heartless.
That would have been so much funnier.
That's just
you guys ruined a good comedy.
I'm here for laughs.
I'm upset about that.
This isn't the feelings podcast. I'm here to
laugh. I know.
Because
exactly.
Marcus and I care about our listeners.
No.
All right?
Forget the listeners.
I care about the listeners.
Oh, okay. No, you don't.
I care about the listeners.
You don't care about the listeners.
I care about the listeners, but if one has to, you know, pass away at the expense of my laughter.
Wow.
Metaphorically
wow.
died. No.
You don't care about the listeners. You care about the Harmonites on Twitter.
James, do you have another entrant to the Danger Zone League?
Can I suggest two? Mostly because I will not be in for the podcast on Friday.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. I guess we're going to let you two in.
Plus, it's 16 teams.
Yeah.
So at some point, you got to start getting more in. I'm going to have to get more than one in.
You got to step it up.
All right. So the first one, I don't have any of the reviews pulled up. I apologize. I will do that next time. I will say this: the first entrant into or the second entrant now into the Danger Zone Fantasy League, a fellow by the name of David Roseborough. He left a review. It was 5 stars. Good for you. That's great. I wish I could pump it up more. You guys pumped up your guys so much. I should have gone first.
I was giving you that option.
I should have gone for it. I didn't realize. I apologize. You guys are so much more prepared than me.
It's okay.
The second one goes to a guy by the name of Clark Schuyler.
Griswold?
Clark Schuyler. Yeah. At CSCHUYLER 935. He has been a consistent and regular contributor to the Fantasy Live show. We've featured his tweets many times on That Helps No One. And he left a great review as well. I promise you, again, I don't have it pulled up, but I promise you it was good. But he has been a Danger Zone fanatic. He's been a That Helps No One fanatic. And he's been part of the Fantasy Live program for many years now. And both Adam Rank and I are happy to welcome in Clark Schuyler into the Danger Zone Fantasy League.
Danger Zone?
All right.
Danger Zone.
That's good stuff. Should we do Daily Daps and get out of here?
Let's do it.
Were you doing
what?
Were you going to do two?
I did two.
Oh, you did
David
two.
Thanks for paying attention.
Oh, I'm sorry.
David Rossborough and Clark Schuyler.
My bad.
Welcome to the league.
Sorry.
Gentlemen.
All right. Let's do Daily Daps and get out of here.
Extra, read all about it.
This is the day.
Daps and hugs. Give me daps because I'll be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up daps about daps.
All right, Daily Dap time. We shall start with the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin. Alex Yalhar, give me a Daily Dap.
Well, I know that there was a lot of turmoil around this event happening, and the organization is rather corrupt that runs it, but I'm having a lot of fun watching the Olympics. Like Saturday morning, I was having my coffee, and there was archery was on,
yeah,
and ping pong was on.
Yeah.
And I was having this discussion with my friend yesterday. We went to see the Galaxy game, and I was like, you know, the archery guys and ping pong guys might not look like what you think of when you're, like, an athlete. Like, if you put them next to, right, like, LeBron James or something. But, right, my God, are these guys doing, like, otherworldly things? You watch archery and you're like, oh, so what? They're shooting a bow. And then they explain that they're basically standing on the 24-yard line and shooting it into the end zone.
Yeah.
And they're hitting a target that's, like, half the size of your cell phone, like, every time.
Every time.
You're like, oh, I would have a 0% chance of it. You could give me 1,000 shots with a bow from that far and I might hit it once. And then the ping pong guys are crazy, and I was watching, like, some cycling. And
ping pong's the best.
Ping pong, I don't have
table
any
tennis,
idea.
Table tennis, gentlemen. Crazy.
Whatever.
Table tennis.
Whatever. Sorry. But, like, the same thing. Like, I could play somebody to 1,000, and I don't know if I'd score a point against them in ping pong, one
it
of those pros.
It is amazing.
They're good.
They're so – it's so fun to watch, but,
and
man.
They stand, like, 50 feet behind.
Yeah.
Them,
right?
So, like, Daily Daps to all the Olympians, too, because they work so hard.
Sure.
And I wish that organization was run better and treated them better, but, like – they're doing a great thing for their country, and, you know, it's the achievement of a life goal. So, right. Daily Daps to all of them.
There
nice.
Marcus Grant, what's up?
I want to Daily Daps a band that I am a fan. I've been a fan for a few years, but the Tijuana Panthers, who just recently put out a new EP called Ghost Food. You can find it on Bandcamp. And also went out to go see them on Saturday night, which I guess this kind of serves as a double dap, if you will. If you are a fan, if you were in Los Angeles and you were a fan of small venues, I highly recommend the Terragram Ballroom just west of downtown Los Angeles. Relatively new. I think it's only been open maybe a year and a half, 2 years at the absolute most. Seen a couple of shows there. Been fantastic. But the Panthers were there on Saturday. Did a phenomenal show. Just a lot of fun. Kind of think like a indie garage surf punk rock band, something like that. You know, Beach Boys with Attitude, if you will.
Beach Boys with Attitude. All right.
But you know, three guys from Long Beach who've been doing this for a little bit, and it's a really good show. So go look them up on Spotify, Tijuana Panthers, and check them out when they come to your town. They do tour quite a bit, so they may come to your town. So keep an eye out for them.
Nice.
The bearded magician of fantasy. I'm trying to come up with different bearded names.
Just call me Franchise.
All right,
man.
All right.
He already has a nickname.
I know. Franchise, just hit me with the Daily Dap.
All right, my Daily Dap is also music related. I've dapped Spotify a million times before because they just keep coming out with cool stuff. They had that running thing. Then they had the Discovery Weekly playlist, which is a hit and everyone loves. They just released this new thing last week called New Release Radar.
Okay.
Ooh.
Where it's similar to your Discover Weekly playlist, but it's focused on the new music out that week. And I just clicked it to, like, check it out to see what it recommended for me, and I'd already had, like, 5 songs in that playlist saved to my favorites already, so they're on point with that. And Spotify just keeps impressing me. So check out, if you have Spotify, check out your new release radar. You might be surprised.
All right, there you go. Matt Harmon, what's up?
Oh, I didn't even know about this release radar thing.
Yeah. He's busy scrolling around on Spotify now.
Oh, man. I like all these bands.
That's right. See, they know what they're doing.
Oh, this is good stuff. Yeah. Okay, I got two. One, first one real quick. Gelhard and I, humble brag, won our Beer Olympics on Friday. So daps to our two teammates, Casey and Brian, for lifting the nation of Germany up to victory.
Total domination. We took first place in three of the four events.
It was filthy. By the end of it, we were just money. So daps to our two teammates for helping us win, and daps for everybody else for coming out.
All right, there you go.
Stink. And the last dap I have is a great article that I read this week. We talked about Run for Johnny earlier. We were tweeting back and forth about Stranger Things, which I finished this weekend, and he was noting that
I heard it's so good.
Yeah, it's really, really good. He even though all the pop culture references fly right over my head because I'm young.
Surprising no one.
Yeah, but anyways, one of the characters in there, Steve. Steve looks just like John Ralphio from Parks and Rec.
He really does.
And I had been thinking it, and when I saw he tweeted, I was like, oh, my God, yes, it's so true. And then somebody who follows us tweeted me the link to this article outlining this entire theory about how Steve is actually John Ralphio's real father.
Wow.
And I read it, and it was just like my jaw dropped. It was so hilarious. So if you've watched both shows, definitely go on Google and just Google Steve, Stranger Things, John Ralphio. It should pop right up. It's on Up Rocks or whatever. So it was hilarious.
So it says he's his father and not John Ralphio himself?
No, it's his real father.
Because he would have been. He was a high school student in the early 80s.
The depth that it goes into about how John Ralphio is, he's clouded from his past. We don't really know anything about him. But also it's pretty clear that he comes from money and Steve was the only one with a nice house. It's crazy. It's
That's awesome.
Go read. It's really funny.
All right. How about this? I will give a daily dap to Ichiro Suzuki.
Yes.
3,000 hits. Good for him.
Woo!
I will, more than anything, I really just wanted to get this off my chest because it's an anti-dap to the ESPN anchor who said, hey, 15 years in this country and Ichiro has not learned English.
Which is untrue.
But the point is this. As an Asian American, all right, why does that even matter? Even if he didn't, I know it's not true because Ichiro can't speak English. But even if he couldn't, who cares? Why are we even bringing this up? When you bring it up in that way, the overall sentiment that you're making is that somehow Ichiro is not a good U.S. citizen, or he is not some kind of that's not what you want from your athlete. That he should learn this language because he's been here. That is so. I got so heated about that because listen, my parents have been here for 36 years. They struggle mightily with this language. It's so different and foreign to them. Obviously,
it's also a terrible language.
Yeah,
it's
hard.
It's one of the most confusing to learn.
It is nonsensical.
And
two, there.
We could go on and on and on.
It makes no sense.
And so my parents struggle with this language after 36 years. Are they less than somehow? Are they bad people somehow? I don't understand. I don't get why there is even a conversation as to whether or not this dude can speak English. It's just, to me, I don't get it, man. And it's like if an American player was playing in the Chinese league, I'm Korean American, by the way, but if he's playing in the Chinese league, all right, is he somehow a bad guy, a bad person if he doesn't pick up Chinese? This doesn't make sense to me. Why are we even writing about this? And I got so fired up and I got so heated about it that I went on this crazy Twitter rant. And I never do that, by the way.
It was a good Twitter rant.
It was a good Twitter rant, yeah.
You fired off that first one with /?, and I was like, reaching for popcorn again, yes.
The stronghold was locked in, and we saw the /?. Here we go.
I didn't know how many I was going to fire off. I think I fired off
five or six.
But whatever, man. I just got so heated about it. And you know what? Anti-DAP to anybody who feels if you move into this country and you don't know the language after a decade plus, that somehow there's something wrong with you. That's just not the case, man.
Silly.
Especially because this guy's here playing baseball.
Yeah,
I don't get it. If he's a dope baseball player, that should be enough. I get it. If he can't speak the English language and he's trying to be a businessman,
That's probably an issue.
That's probably an issue. Then,
yeah, man.
Okay, cool.
He's
right?
speaking with his bat, and he spoke 3,000 times. So
come
chill.
On.
Oh, I love Ichiro, man. He's one of my favorite players.
One of my absolute favorite players, for sure. He's got a hose of a cannon.
He's like 42 or something?
Yeah, man. He's a great professional, and he's had nothing but, you know, he's been nothing but a great professional.
Classy.
Yes, exactly. A classy representative.
Yeah.
Of the game of baseball. Yeah. All right, so there you go. Rant over.
It's beautiful. Before we get the music, don't forget, sign up today to play NFL.com/fantasy.
Yes, NFL.com/draftkit.
Draft kit.
By the way, the show, NFL Fantasy Live, will return to the internets next week.
Oh,
NFL.com.
Yeah.
Webisodes.
The webisodes. We will have webisodes for a couple of weeks before we finally return back to NFL Network.
Read Harmon's blowtorching of Todd Gurley at NFL.com/Harmon.
Yes.
Like us on Facebook. And don't forget, to, if you want to get in one of the fan leagues, lots of positions still open.
Absolutely.
Like,
tons.
20-some?
Some odd.
30
yeah.
maybe?
Absolutely.
I don't know. A lot.
A lot.
But rate and review the podcast on iTunes, your podcast app, whatever. Take a screenshot. Send it to me. We'll read the reviews anyways, but the screenshot just helps us sift through the noise a little bit.
You
so.
Need to subscribe, you need to rate and review. Those are the three things you need to do. And again, we don't care if it's positive, if it's negative, if it's funny. That's what we care
right.
about. Subscribe, rate, and review today, the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. All right, for the WizKid from Wisconsin, for the franchise, for MG Mike, I'm Marcus Grant, and for Matt Harmon, I'm James Gell. We're out.